senior reporter with the NFL Network and NFL.com, co-host of the Huddle and Flow podcast, avid golfer, joining us on Extra 1360. Jim, it's Darren. Thank you very much.
What's going on, Darren?
How are you doing? You watching the Masters?
Oh, of course.
What would you shoot on this course? What do you shoot at Torrey Pines? You get out there on the South, you have a good day. What is Jim Trotter shooting at Torrey South?
I'm trying to remember. Last time I played there, I hadn't played in a while, and... Well, let's put it this way. At least I know I broke 100. So that's good. A good thing. If I were to play Augusta, which I hope to do one day, especially under these conditions, it's funny. We were talking about that on social media today. I got to believe it'd go 140, 150 or more.
Wow.
It'd be crazy. Oh, come on, man. It's funny how amateurs think, you know, they watch these guys on TV and think they can step out and just add a few strokes and match what these guys are doing. This course is unbelievably tough, and these greens defy description in terms of the speed. And, you know, everyone who has been to Augusta tells me TV doesn't do it justice in terms of how there is no flat lie. You're always hitting off of some sort of rise or fall, or you know, a downward lie, whatever. And it's just not that simple. So TV doesn't show you the undulations that you would see in person. So I'm a realist. I don't BS people about golf. I would probably shoot like a 150 if I were probably out at Augusta. But I would tell you this: I would not be going for it the way I would on a normal course, man. I'd be playing true old man golf where, okay, it's par four. I'm playing this for par seven. I'm just pulling out the 9 iron and the 8 iron or whatever and just trying to work my way down the course, not trying to be a hero.
Yeah, the only reason I express some surprise, Jim, is if you are breaking 100 on the South, although not set up for a major championship, but breaking 100 on the
and
South.
And not playing from the tip. Yeah, right. But I'm not playing from the tips either.
Okay. All right, fair. But at 140, yeah, I mean, that's honest, I think. And that should tell you all something. Everybody be honest here. Stop with your 110, 120 stuff. That's not happening.
Okay. No. God, it's just ridiculous. I mean, like, you're watching, like right now, watching a little earlier, Dustin Johnson missed, you know, what would normally be, if you're on the course, a gimme putt, because it's within the leather. And you realize, man, it's not that simple. But, you know, everybody thinks they're a weekend warrior, and, you know, just like they watch these NFL players or NBA players and whatnot, feel like if these guys can do it, they can do it. It ain't what you think it is once you get out there.
Jim Trotter of the NFL Network is joining us on Extra 1360. Jim, I realize this story is exactly 1 week old, and we talked a little bit about it. It was Padres opening day, but a story broke from the LA Times about the Spanos family, a little bit of Spanos family drama. Pretty embarrassing, I would say, that this sort of stuff sees the light of day. I don't know, as capable as they might be of being embarrassed, I suppose. What did you think of that? Anything stand out to you? Do you think anything is coming from that story that we saw in the LA Times last week?
No, I think what you said first and foremost is accurate. It was embarrassing for the family. And I know from my time covering that franchise, the one thing with Dean in particular is, you know, they take it very seriously in terms of something that embarrasses the family, whether that's a coaching performance, whether that's a team performance, or whether that's a business performance. So that was my first thought was, you know, it was pretty clear that this wasn't going to sit well with him or the family, having their business out in the street like that. Because I remember when I used to cover the team, and there were certain things I would write about the organization in terms of how it was being run and whatnot. And they would get upset at me about that and say, you know, it's one thing to write about wins and losses and this, that, and the other, but it's another thing to write about how the business is run. And they didn't think that that was fair game. So I know that's something that didn't sit well with them. If there's one word that describes that story and what's going on, Darren, and this is what a couple of owners gave to me or said to me, you know, just in private, in one word, it was sad, you know. So, but here's what I do know. You know, there may be a disagreement between the sister and the other members of the family over the running of the team and whether or not the team should be sold. And I've been told that it is not going to be sold. that if she wants to sell her share of the team, they will purchase her shares of the team, and then they will move on. But there are no plans to sell the Chargers now or in a few years.
So Jeff Bezos, Amazon, he's not on line one here. He's not standing by with his credit card ready to purchase the LA Chargers and do whatever he's going to do with it?
I can only tell you what my understanding is. My understanding at this point is that no, there are no plans to sell the team now or in the immediate future or near future.
All right. Well, there you go. Jim Trotter, NFL Network, joining us on Extra 1360, host of the Huddle and Flow podcast, co-host with our friend Steve Weiss. Jim, I know you put it out there here recently that you think that the top four picks, unprecedented in NFL draft history, could go quarterback, 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 quarterback. How are you feeling about that today, given how the draft is starting to take form, certainly at least at the top of it?
Oh, I still feel that way. Look, the reality is, as you know, and we've said this a million times, is that it's a quarterback-driven league. And the one thing we see with the draft, or we're seeing more and more, is that teams are unafraid of using capital to move up and try and get a quarterback. And teams overrate these quarterbacks because of it. You know, if you look at the numbers, since I think it's, and I'm doing this off the top of my head, so I may be slightly wrong, but since 05 to 2018, there were 40 quarterbacks drafted in the first round. I think 17 of those quarterbacks are no longer even in the league, or they're unsigned at this point, and only 7 of those 40 are even with the original team that drafted them. So it tells you that this is not an exact science, and teams are going to fail more often than they hit when it comes to a quarterback, particularly in the first round. But teams are desperate. And the other factor in the equation is that, you know, we're talking about rookie deals here, so it makes it easier now to move on from a young quarterback if you think he's going to be what you projected when you drafted him. In the past, you were paying, I think Sam Bradford got a $50 million signing bonus when he signed, and he was the last rookie class that was not under the rookie wage scale. And now, because there is a rookie wage scale and the finances in terms of those first-round picks are set in stone and they are not exorbitant like they were back in the day, it doesn't cost as much for you to admit you made a mistake or that he's not the right guy to move on. So I think we're seeing some of that as well. But, I do believe that four quarterbacks will go number one. Look, we know three are going right off the board right away, 1, 2, 3, with Jacksonville, New York, the Jets, and then the 49ers. The question is, what happens at four with Atlanta? And one of two things is going to happen there, I believe. Either Atlanta is going to say, you know what, we have Matt Ryan under contract for a few more years. He's still playing at a high level. But under a new GM and a new head coach, we don't plan on ever drafting this high again. And if we're going to get a franchise quarterback, the best place to do it is at the top of the draft. And therefore, we go ahead and take one now if we believe that he is a franchise quarterback. And that's key here, that you believe that that player is a franchise quarterback. And you sit them for, you know, a year or two, whatever it is. The other scenario is that you trade the pick, and knowing that you're rebuilding, you give it up to a team that is in need of a quarterback. You get more draft capital, and you build your team that way. One thing I do know is the new GM, Terry Fontenot, when he was on our podcast, told us that, number one, he is not afraid of stacking positions, even if it is a position of strength. Meaning that if he, and I'm using just the quarterback here as an example, he wasn't referring specifically to that, but if you have a quarterback who you believe is a talented player and your draft board says that the best player clearly in that draft at that time is a quarterback, he's not afraid of taking a quarterback at that position, or if it were running back or an offensive lineman, whatever. And if Terry thinks that way, to me, that says I could see them taking a quarterback at four if they decided to stay there.
How much of that depends on, as you mentioned, the first three, everybody is in agreement, the first three will be quarterbacks. How much of that is just the way or who the first three quarterbacks are for Atlanta?
Well, that's why I say you have to believe that whoever that player is a franchise quarterback. You don't draft for need there. And I think that's where a lot of teams get into trouble. They force themselves to take a player at a certain position because it is a position of need for them. And traditionally, that's why you get into trouble and why things don't work out. Look, it's amazing to me that when you think right now, Aaron Donald's the best player in the NFL, period, regardless of position, offense, defense, whatever. He wasn't drafted until the 13th pick. So, and there have been other instances where we have seen great players who were not taken until later. The players that we all knew, based on our evaluations going into the draft, were not as good, got drafted ahead of those players. Because why? Because the team had a need at that position and they felt compelled to do it, whether it's to get fans off their backs, whether it's to get owners off their backs, or whether it's to cross their fingers and hope that that player ultimately develops into someone who will be a franchise guy. They go that direction. So with the Falcons, if they were to go quarterback at four again, the only way it happens is if they believe that it is a player who is a franchise guy for them, that they believe going forward.
Jim Trotter of the NFL Network joining us on Extra 1360. I'm not anywhere. I'm anecdotally saying this, Jim, that it doesn't seem like many people out there in the punditry world believe that Mac Jones should be the third overall pick in this draft. Now, maybe you've spoken, and I wouldn't doubt it for a single second, that you've spoken to others who think that he's better than he's getting credit for. Is it possible, though, that John Lynch, Kyle Shanahan, that you know, they are in agreement with what seems to be widely a panned idea that Mac Jones would be the third quarterback taken or the third pick overall in this draft?
Well, first of all, it's not John Lynch and Kyle Shanahan. It's Kyle Shanahan, period. This is his pick, and he is going to choose who that quarterback is. You know, look, Kyle has contractually the authority to choose who he wants. Now, obviously, he would want to be in agreement with John on this, but I think John would defer to Kyle when it comes to grading quarterbacks because it's Kyle's offense. He calls the plays, he designs the plays, and therefore he knows what kind of quarterback he wants. I have no issue if Mac Jones goes third. I do believe that if he is the pick, it was a lot to give up for him when I think you could have gotten him later in the draft. I don't think you had to give up as much as you did because most teams don't agree that he's the third best quarterback in this draft. Having said that, and I always come back to this, Darren, you can't play scared. You can't play prevent defense. If Kyle believes this is the best quarterback for his offense and that this guy will help them win Super Bowls, then you go for it. But again, you're not doing it out of need. You have to believe truly that this guy can fulfill all of the things that you need out of that position to win championships. Is he as athletic as Justin Fields or Trey Lance? No. Can he do the off-schedule things as well as they do? No. History shows that. But in everyone that I talk to, he is a guy who obviously can make all the throws that are necessary, who has anticipation, who is accurate, all of those things. So, to me, as I look at him, and I don't consider myself an evaluator at all, but he's Kirk Cousins 2.0. And we know that Kyle Shanahan loves Kirk Cousins. And I don't know if that is driving this. But if it is, I just hope that Kyle is right, because it's an awful lot they've given up to get up to number three if it's to take Mac Jones.
Interesting. And as much as attention as the quarterbacks in the draft are getting, Jim, I think it's certainly been a storyline of the offseason here that you've got notable quarterbacks who are being given the keys in a lot of different places. Jameis Winston in New Orleans, most recently Sam Darnold, we think, in Carolina. Stafford with the Rams, right? Goff in Detroit, Carson Wentz in Indianapolis. Who amongst this, what stands out to you in terms of new quarterback, new city? You know, what do you think really is in line to click? Like, what's the combination, the new player in the new city that you really like the best of that group?
You know, that's hard, Darren. You know, you look at for instance, Indianapolis, and you say Carson Wentz is there, and he's reunited with Frank Reich, who he had great success under in Philly when Frank was there. So how is that going to work? You know, can Frank get out of Carson what he got out of him that 1 year that the Eagles won the Super Bowl and Carson was truly an MVP front runner until he got injured and ended up missing the playoffs? So that's an interesting one for me. You know, Detroit doesn't interest me that much. I mean, Goff is, I think he's a good player. It's funny in today's society, you're either great or you're a bust. And we don't seem to have that middle ground anymore. I think Jared Goff's a good player. I don't think he's great. I don't think he's a bust. But what I'm fascinated by to see is how well does he play in Detroit, because you know, we talk about Sean McVay as being this great offensive mind, play designer, play caller. He's the young whiz, this, that, and the other. And yet for him to get rid of Jared Goff, what he is saying is, I can't take him any higher. He has reached his peak. And so I'm interested to see if Jared Goff's play had as much to do with McVay or whether or not it was simply a player beginning to mature. Because if he goes and plays well in Detroit, does that take some of the luster off of McVay, who we've sort of made out to be this boy wonder? And I'm not saying that disparagingly either. I think Sean McVay is a really good offensive coach, who is some of his play designs are they're amazing. But again, he realized in his mind that he couldn't go any further with Jared Goff. And so now he's on to Matthew Stafford. So that'll be interesting to see how that marriage works out. So who knows? In New Orleans, it's funny. You say Jameis Winston is the next guy, but Sean Payton will tell you it is an open competition between Jameis and Taysom Hill. Now, I do ultimately believe Jameis will win it, but they have not handed the job to Jameis at any point. So that's going to be an interesting one there as well. And all of these storylines are interesting because Darnold in Carolina, we said one of the reasons he didn't succeed in New York is that they didn't have parts around him. Well, there will be parts around him down in Carolina. So I'm interested to see how he plays under that with Joe Brady as his offensive coordinator and Matt Rhule as the head coach. They're all fascinating storylines that'll get a lot of attention during the season.
Yeah, it's a lot of movement for first-round quarterbacks. Think about it. Every guy that I just mentioned there was taken right towards the top of the draft, either number one or number two between Goff, Wentz, Stafford, Darnold, Winston, at least top three. Hey, Jim, last thing.
Yeah, but remember what I told you, right? Aaron. From 05 to 18, there were 40 quarterbacks drafted in the first round. 4-0. Only seven are still with the original team that drafted them. And five of those seven were in the 17-18 draft, if memory serves me right. So only two quarterbacks from 2005 to 16? Only two from 05 to 16 are still with the team that originally drafted them. So we're making this out as something remarkable, all of this movement with quarterbacks, but really, it's not. We've seen this trend for a while now, and the history and the numbers tell us that quarterbacks just aren't staying with clubs. Clubs are moving on quickly from guys.
It's becoming college, right? I mean, you spend 4 years there, and then you move on to the next guy, and it's sort of become that. You know, you spend your rookie contract, and then they go out and find another one. I realize this is a completely random question, Jim. It just crossed my mind this morning. The Raiders under John Gruden, 4-12, 7-9, 8-8. So at least in terms of record, they're getting better. You know, that's the right trajectory, I suppose. They have the 17th overall pick in the draft, but they're also in a division now where Patrick Mahomes has been in the AFC Championship game three straight years, Super Bowl twice. All of a sudden now people feel differently about the Chargers because of their quarterback as well. What's 2021 all about for the Vegas Raiders?
Defense. They've got to get some defense. You know, offensively, they were good enough to make the playoffs last year. Defensively, they were not. And Gruden has yet to address that in terms of since he got there. Look, you can make an argument that they're not as good a team now as when John arrived. And I always say this, but I firmly believe it. This is why I believe that owners should never give total control to one individual. I believe you need a system of checks and balances. Because coaches fall in love with players or fall out of love with players sometimes because they let emotion dictate their decision making. And when I look at some of the moves that John Gruden has made, and I know Mike Mayock is there, but we all know John Gruden calls the shots. But when I look at some of the moves that John Gruden has made, it just doesn't make any sense. And that's not only in the draft, but that's free agency. Think about this. A couple of years back, 3 years back in free agency, they signed a bunch of guys, gave a lot of money to Trent Brown, LaMarcus Joyner, and there was another player in there. Those players lasted, and this is in free agency, those players lasted only, I believe, 2 or 3 years with the team. And in terms of guaranteed money among those 2-3 players, there was $80 million invested. That's an awful lot of money to invest in guys who aren't even around after 3 years on your club. These are bad decisions that were being made, but they're being made in part because you have a coach who is desperate to win and win right away. And they told us when they traded Khalil Mack and Amari Cooper and these guys that they were going to build through the draft. But every year, what do we see with the Raiders? That they're throwing out crazy money at free agents because they can't get it right in the draft in terms of building that way. So for the Raiders to take that next step, they've got to address their defense. They think Yannick Ngakoue is going to be the guy that finally gives them that edge presence that they haven't had since they traded Khalil Mack. I'm not so convinced that that's true. I think they have a lot of work still to do defensively, and part of the problem, as you say, is they play in an incredibly difficult division. So I'm not convinced the Raiders are going anywhere this year.
Always our pleasure. Jim Trotter, you're the man. Thank you very much.
All right, Darren. Thanks for
having me. Thank you. Jim Trotter, NFL senior reporter, NFL Network senior reporter, NFL.com, co-host of the Huddle and Flow podcast. I realize that's like the most random question that I could have tossed at Jim today. I just was looking, thinking like they've already been passed, obviously, by Kansas City. Feels like they're being passed by the Chargers, at least in terms of whose quarterback would you rather have? And Denver, I don't know what to make out of Denver, but where's that going? You know what I mean? I give the guy a 10-year deal. Where's it going? I don't see where it's going. Do you? They got
no,
a nice stadium.
I think he was right. Like he said,
got a great stadium. I'd love to go out there. I'd love to go to Vegas. I'd love to go to that place.
Is that going to be the first NFL stadium that you step foot into?
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah, that would be a fun one. I would do that.
Well, where's the team going though?
Right now the best quarterback.
8-8 forever for John Gruden for 10 years for $100 million.
Do you put Derek Carter in the same class as number one? It's Patrick Mahomes is in a class of his own, but Justin Herbert had a phenomenal rookie season. He's going to get better. He's got some weapons around him. They've got superstars on that defense. I mean, that's a pretty loaded team. Change the head coach. What do the Raiders have? Who is right now? Like who jumps out at you as the clear best player on the team?
Derek Carter.
Derek Carter.
All right. I don't know where it's going.
Yeah.
That's the only thing. Maybe Jim could see it, but Jim doesn't see it either.
Derek Carter.
Thank you very much. We'll be back on Extra 13.